This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We switch gears. We're joined by Daniel Erspommer. He is the Pelican Institute's chief executive officer, and the Pelican Institute is billed as a nonpartisan research and educational organization. It's the think tank, and it's the leading voice for free markets in Louisiana. And Daniel Erspommer, good to see you.
Thanks, Jim, for having me.
And we visited a few times over the years with your predecessor, Kevin Kane, who was quite a man and died much too early.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we miss Kevin.
877-217-5757 if you'd like to join the conversation with Daniel Erspommer. If you'd like to pose a question via email, go to talk@talklouisiana.org. Now, you were involved intricately in criminal justice reform in Louisiana, and most people are touting it as a success, but there are those who say it's not so successful. Your thoughts about where it is and what the outcome has been?
You bet. You know, the great thing about our experience with criminal justice reform was it really brought people together from all sides and all walks of life, the fiscal conservatives to religious conservatives to the left, and everybody across the board. And we came together to present reforms that increase public safety, reduce recidivism, and even better, save taxpayer dollars in the meantime. And so the important thing and how we got to this point was to look at data and outcomes and base our decisions on that. And it's important we continue to do that as we serve as watchdogs and evaluate success of the program. So, you know, the critics, unfortunately, all too often rely on anecdotes rather than actually looking at what are the outcomes, what is the data, and what's it telling us.
Well, it will likely be an issue in the governor's election because Governor Edwards was supportive of it, and he has people who are Republicans who helped him. He couldn't have gotten it done without Republicans,
That's
obviously.
Right.
And then there are others like Senator Kennedy who say it's not been successful. Is there any data that shows one way or the other?
There's no conclusive data yet. It's too early to tell. What we can tell from what we know so far is that recidivism rates are trending down, crime rates are trending down, and all of the initial signs are really positive. Now, I'm not ready to declare success, or certainly the data does not suggest that we should declare failure. We have to remain vigilant. We have to watch it, make sure it's being implemented well. But anyone who's claiming total success or total failure, it's just too early to say.
Now, you have a jobs and opportunity agenda that you are promoting. What does this entail?
That's right. So as we looked at the landscape, here we are sitting in one of the worst economies in the country. As the rest of the country grows, we've seen, thankfully, a little bit of growth, but nowhere near what we've seen in other states. We have people and jobs leaving Louisiana for friendlier places like Texas and Tennessee and Florida. And so we said, what are the problems? We wanted to dig into a research agenda that said, Why are jobs leaving, and what can we do to bring those jobs and that opportunity back to our citizens? And so over the last several months, we've released a series of deep dive reports. We've got a couple more to do, focused on everything from tax and budget reform to criminal justice and K-12 education. How do we balance state and local government? And then what do we do about our legal system to ensure we have a fair playing field for everyone?
Do you get down in the weeds on the budget?
We do.
So the budget of Louisiana is around $30 billion or so. It's at a level that it's been for several years, by the way. It hasn't been going up exponentially. But for a state our size, some people believe it's way too much, and more than half of it goes to the Department of Health. So can that be changed, or is that just reality?
Well, it is absolutely a lot of money, and actually, it's grown by about 16% over the last 3 years. So, it has not been flat, as others have suggested. If you look over time, obviously, we had a bump up after Katrina, but now, unfortunately, it's grown pretty substantially. And look, here's the problem: it's not focused on the priorities of the people of Louisiana, as you and your listeners probably know. The legislature only controls about 11% of that $30 billion. So can you imagine a household budget where
a lot of it is federal money, right?
That's right.
How much?
Over half at this
point. Okay, so there you go. So, and then there are areas that are constitutionally protected.
That's right.
So 11% of $30 billion is a little over $3
billion. That's right, about $3.5 billion. So, but imagine you're trying to run your household budget off a budget that was set 90%, almost 90% of it set by your crazy uncle 50 years ago. We couldn't respond to the needs of today, and that's what's happening here in Louisiana, is we have too many things locked up in these non-reviewed spending items. We call them dedications, whether they're constitutional or statutory. And so now we've elected legislators to go to Baton Rouge to reflect the priorities of our people. And here they are. Their hands are tied. And so we end up lurching from budget crisis to budget crisis because we can't budget effectively or project revenue effectively. And we've got to change that. We've got to fix the system fundamentally.
All right. 877-217-5757 or talk at talklouisiana.org for Daniel R. Spommer. He is a Pelican Institute's chief executive officer based in New Orleans, graduate of Tulane.
That's
he
right.
didn't wear green today.
Roll
he
wave.
Wore purple.
Right? That's right.
But Daniel, the listener, David in Lafayette, asked, where do you cut? You have mentioned some of these areas, but when you get down to specifics, people sometimes they grow reticent to name specifics.
That's right.
Where would you start?
Yeah, well, a few places, and the reality is, and this is the challenge the legislature has. This is why dedications are really quite popular, because the legislators say, "Oh, look, I can't cut it. The law says I can't." So part of it is about freeing that up so you can find efficiencies across the board, right? We've got a huge chunk, billions of dollars going to the Department of Health. Because big chunks of it are federal dollars matched by state dollars, we have a hard time slicing those away. So we've got to look for efficiencies first in the big departments and then look at waste. We're spending money on local parks, we're spending money on athletic ventures, we're spending money on all sorts of things that
are
example, small.
We give a lot of money to state colleges to play football.
Right.
And in fact, every one of them except LSU loses a lot of money
right.
playing football, but the state foots the bill. So should that stop?
I think it should be on the table. Look, we've got to be able to have those debates. I love football just like everybody else. Well, maybe not everybody, but just like large swaths of our state does. But I'm willing to pay for it. I buy tickets when I want to go to a game. And look, there's all sorts of politics. Whenever you get into let's cut this, there's some very vocal constituency who wants to come out and say, no, not that. But we've got to give legislators the ability to make those decisions and prioritize effectively. We can't just keep sending taxpayers a bill every time we want to spend more money.
Well, I recall when Buddy Romer ran for governor, he talked about us having too many colleges. That was 1987. Well, we still have the same number of colleges.
Yeah.
Bobby Jindal made what was viewed as a modest proposal to merge UNO and SUNO, and it went nowhere. So when you start fooling with universities, there's a lot of pushback.
Yeah, there sure is.
Do we need one board? Would that help resolve this?
You know, I do think there's some streamlining to be done. To be candid, we have not. I like to make decisions based on research and fact. And higher education is not an area where we have spent much time in a deep dive. I could make some general comments, and I think some sort of efficiency is the right thing. But I'm not sure I have the right answer for that.
A question from Tracy at the Capitol: do we need a constitutional convention?
I think a constitutional convention could accomplish some really big things. Part of the challenge, whether it's tax reform, one of the things that we've spent a lot of time looking at is how to reform our taxes to create a fairer, flatter, more job-positive tax code for our state. And the reality is to do that requires constitutional change. And so we have a constitution, this just continues to amaze me, that dedicates over 13,000 words just to how the state ought to spend money. The entirety of the U.S. Constitution and its amendments is 7,500 words. We can't get the job done even just in how to spend money in those words. So we do need constitutional change. There are certainly different ways to go about it, but I think the convention is probably where we are right now.
And each year we get constitutional amendments
That's
to vote
right.
upon. It never stops.
It doesn't. It keeps building and building and building. And complexity is the sin here. Whether it's the Constitution or the tax code or the way we spend money, it's really comes down to a complex and Byzantine system that puts all roads to Baton Rouge and takes hands out of the people's power out of the people's hands.
A question from Nikki saying, "You believe in free markets. We know that. Are you in accord with Dr. Lauren Scott, who believes that we shouldn't have any minimum wage? If we really want totally free markets, should the market determine what happens?"
The challenge with raising minimum wage consistently is that it we see this now in New York. It's actually driving away jobs. So the best way to help people make a better living wage and to grow up the ladder and continue to earn more is to have a thriving economy. What we shouldn't do, especially in a time of economic downturn, which we still find ourselves, is raise burden on small businesses across the state, which are the backbone of the economy.
Right. But other states have raised it and have done okay. But what about ITEP?
I think ITEP is a perfect example of why we need tax reform. Here's the very rational and functional reason that ITEP exists, is because the property tax system is complex, and the corporate tax rate is incredibly burdensome, not just in size, but in complexity. And so companies said very rationally, hey, we don't have any incentive to expand. Why don't you give us a tax break? The real answer to all of this is fundamental tax reform that, again, flattens the system, that gives makes complexity into simplicity, removes most of the deductions and credits in favor of lower and flatter rates.
We're short on time, but you believe Louisiana has a much more complex tax system than other states?
Dramatically more complex.
Well, that's a topic that's fertile, and we look forward to a return visit.
Absolutely.
Thank you for coming in. Driving in from New Orleans, Daniel Erspommer. He is the Chief Executive Officer for the Pelican Institute for Public Policy. You can go to pelicaninstitute.org, and you can go to talklouisiana.org and hear the podcast. Stay tuned.